Welcome to the Faith is Not Blind podcast. I'm Sarah Devenier, and I'm very pleased to be here in the southeast of England in Watford with Beth. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
We're glad that you're here and that you're willing to share your story. It's not always easy to share a story that's vulnerable, but we appreciate you being willing to do that.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you were raised in the church.
I was, yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your experiences at home with the church and what the environment was like there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in quite what you'd probably describe as being quite an orthodox LDS home. We had all of the wonderful teachings and the family home evening and the family council meetings and
even family council.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's like bumping it up a level.
Family council. We'd have birthday interviews where I'd have a blessing once a year.
Wow.
It was definitely, my parents worked very hard to make sure that our education in the church was solid and grounded. So
were your parents both converts, or had they been raised in the church?
My dad, I'm pretty sure he was baptized at the age of 8, but his parents converted just before that. So it was all kind of new to him when he was baptized, I think. I need to check that with him, but my mum was raised in the church.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you're a third or fourth generation member of the church, which is interesting, especially here in England. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about those teachings? It sounds like it was rigorous, but at the same time, maybe not too pushy. How did you feel about it? What were your responses from a young age with that level of, like you said, orthodoxy?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it was all I knew. So it was very natural and it was normal. It was what felt comfortable and safe for me. So it was fine until I hit the teenage years, and that's when it started to become very frustrating and feel very limiting.
So what was frustrating about it?
Well, I guess I started to find myself living in two sort of social spheres. My school friends knew that I was a member of the church. I was quite open about it, but there was still, I couldn't avoid the tensions that came when I'm quite a social person. I enjoy the social interactions, and I always have done, and I kind of was thriving off that. And so with knowing that my friends respected me and loved me and wanted me to be part of their experiences was kind of upsetting, to feel like I had to make conscious choices to not spend time with them based on what they were choosing to do with their time.
So you were feeling limited.
Yeah, I was a bit, yeah. Restricted.
Had you had any what we would label spiritual experiences yourself, individually?
Yeah, definitely. I actually remember quite clearly when I first had my seed of doubt. I remember that clearly, and it was pretty much straight out of primary. But to that point, I had a very straightforward belief system in my Heavenly Father. I remember as well actually having I don't know how old I was, but I'm pretty sure it's pre-baptism, that I prayed earnestly for my brother's guinea pig to return to us, and moments later it reappeared, and I was just like, well, yeah, of course, what else would have happened? But alongside that, like, just obvious, you know, knowledge that would be the case, I also felt an immense gratitude and connection to my Heavenly Father. So that was special. I definitely enjoyed that through my primary years.
Yeah.
And I remember a lot of I wouldn't say a lot, but I remember a conversation, or perhaps two, I couldn't say, but I remember my mum being quite loving when she was teaching me about prayer. And I remember her teaching me that Heavenly Father really wants to know what I'm doing and really wants to know how my day's gone. And that was lovely as a young child.
I want to come back to that a little bit later, because I love that idea that it's not just what is taught, but it's how.
Yeah.
And so your mom is teaching the gospel, but because she's teaching it with love, that is going to plant a different kind of seed than if she had lectured you.
Yeah,
or
totally.
Made you feel like you have to believe this.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that idea of how it's taught, not just what is taught.
Yeah.
But let's talk about you wanting to be with your friends and that social pressure.
Yeah.
That and feeling like, yeah, I've got these wonderful feelings at home. Yeah. I love my parents. But
I don't want to disappoint them.
I don't want to be restricted.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting word. So when you found yourself not wanting to be restricted, what did you do next?
Well, it was tricky because I had to kind of navigate this issue of being kind of, I was just starting to edge out onto the outskirts of inclusivity with my friendship groups, and that was difficult for me because obviously I just wanted to be involved and I wanted to be there with them, enjoying it all. I wanted to be at the parties. I wanted to know what was going on, and I didn't want to feel kind of segregated in any way from anywhere. I wanted to be involved, and that's not to say I even had an interest in doing the same things. Like my friends were from quite a young age, quite sexually active, and alcohol was commonplace. Not so much drugs until later, but. Yeah, I mean, there was all of that. And but I remember a particular struggle with the idea that the instructions I'd been given to wear modest clothing. And I did not understand it. I could not get it. I just felt so bizarre. I felt it was so bizarre that on a hot day spent with my friends, I'd have to even consider wearing a T-shirt that was warmer than it needed to be, you know, and that was as far as it went for me. And then it crossed over into being an issue of, okay, well, now this has got to be about my faith. There's nothing else I can do about that. It's
right.
Something I have to face.
So
now.
Because this idea of modesty was so tied up in your faith, then it was almost like, well, if I can't be modest, then maybe I can't have faith, and I want to be with my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is
like
interesting.
One or the other, which
yeah,
I
and
it,
and it's
confusing.
So cultural too. Mm. Modesty is such a cultural thing, but to have that tied up with your faith naturally is going to cause difficulties, especially for girls.
Yeah, totally.
So,
and I think because I was active in my attendance, I would go to Young Women's on a Sunday, but also midweek for the mutual activities.
Yeah.
There was quite an open dialogue about these things, and with my leaders, it was very much like keeping tabs on the girls, you know. And obviously, we've all been there. I've been a young women's president. You have to have some kind of semblance
that you're on the other side.
Yeah, totally.
But it can feel a little restrictive, especially if someone is keeping tabs on
you,
and you feel like that. Does my value come from what I wear? That it's a confusing message to get.
Yeah.
So. Where did that lead you?
I just down a road of frustration, just solid frustration for a long, long time. But you know, I had through my youth, I didn't really push back too much. I think I did compared to some of my siblings, but I definitely went to probably more parties. I probably pushed a lot harder to be with my friends, regardless of their situations. And so I was definitely pushing my parents into an uncomfortable zone, definitely. And I think I felt okay about that. There was something about kind of moving through my youth in that way, challenging the perception, challenging what I was hearing to be true, but not sure for myself. I found that quite liberating. And I definitely learned things about myself during that time that were very much along the lines of I don't seem to be one of those people that can just accept rote answers. You know, like I struggle to just hear and believe.
Yeah.
But there has to be a process involved for me.
So you were finding your own paradigm and dealing with the tensions in what seems like a healthy way.
Yeah.
What ended up happening as you were exploring those things, like you said, feeling frustrations, what happened with your church attendance eventually?
So really, I guess the beginning of the kind of crucial crisis of faith that I experienced, the kind of shift that I experienced, came ironically when I was kind of at my peak spiritually. I was attending an EFY conference. Do you know what FY is?
Yeah.
Or FSY now, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a youth conference, and I really, all of the seminars resonated with me. I really felt like, okay, do you know what? All of that sacrifice was worth it. I haven't done anything too serious, so that would mean that I would struggle moving forward. I kind of feel like I'm set now because I have a testimony. Yay, you know, I kind of felt like that. And then I met a boy, and it was as simple as I was totally infatuated. We were in love, and it was, you know, kind of a head over heels situation. And mm-hmm. he was definitely the first. I'd had practice boyfriends before then.
Practice boyfriends. I'm going to remember that for my daughters. Practice boyfriends. But he was a real boyfriend, not a practice boyfriend.
He was my first
boyfriend.
Real boyfriend. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And I turned 18 shortly after we started dating. And I made a conscious decision to sleep with him. And that was where it kind of just tumbled, I guess.
Yeah.
It got confusing.
And that illustrates how much gray area there is.
So
that
much.
You were feeling the spirit and yet didn't want to be restricted by it. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. you made this decision. And it wasn't that you were a bad person.
No.
You just were infatuated with your first real boyfriend.
Yeah, and it happened quite organically. It wasn't a case of me feeling pressured or feeling like I had to perform, or I kind of owned my body a little bit, and I kind of just felt like I kind of know what I want to do with it. And it was something that was foreign to me, but that actually the sex before marriage for me had always been a problem. And it was the one constant issue I had never been able to knock on the head. And I remember making that conscious decision to go there. And I remember also in that moment thinking about a feeling of doubt that I had in the first week of Young Women's, of like, I think it was one of my first Young Women's lessons about the law of chastity. And it was the first stumbling block I had, and it stuck that whole sort of way through my youth.
So you had this seed of doubt, like you said earlier, mm-hmm. and decided, I am going to deliberately make this choice, which is interesting. So
yeah, it wasn't so much a deliberate choice. I felt like I had this lesson about the law of chastity, and I remember receiving all the generic answers and feeling kind of satisfied, but just not like, kind of like, I understand why you would see it that way, like, but for me it was more like, I get it for things like a fling, I get it for,
but if you actually love someone,
but if you love a person and it's bringing you closer to them and all these things. And I thought about my parents and the way they loved each other and all of those things, and I just thought, well, that's natural. Like, I know they have
so there
sex.
Was a little bit of a disconnect. You were getting the information, the what was being taught to you, but how it was taught that wasn't resonating with you.
So
there wasn't a spiritual connection.
Yeah.
So after you had made this decision, what did your path look like after that?
It was, I probably do not have time to go through the whole thing, but it was so difficult. I guess the immediate aftermath was kind of triggering for me. And I need to be very clear. I've never held any kind of blame towards my parents or anyone involved in this situation. But and that kind of lack of blame, I'm not putting that very well, but the absence of blame there was kind of one of the things that triggered me to feel more and more kind of bitter, actually, towards the church. Not really, just the establishment and the way that they had been, for want of a better word, perhaps conditioned to react the way they did, and to so I guess I should just tell you what happened. And I have spoken to my parents about this and my sister about this, and they are very happy for me to talk about this, so I feel comfortable. But
yeah, please share.
I think, I have. It's one of the only nights that I can really remember very, very clearly. But I remember being kind of just in this turmoil in my bedroom, just really like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? How do I move forward with this? I don't feel like I've done a bad thing, but I know my parents are going to find out, and then what do I do? Because then I'd have to address it, and then it would have to be this whole big thing that I'm not ready for. And then I felt concern. I felt concern for my family and for my place in my family, you know?
Yeah.
And that's bizarre, because, and I remember thinking it's bizarre, like, why am I thinking these things? Because I had a very solid, loving family. We've been so vocal about our love for each other the whole way through. You know, we're very affectionate, we're very, you know, loving towards each other. And so I knew that they would love me, but I just think I was dreading the hurt that they would feel.
Yeah.
So obviously in that moment, my sister calls me, and I've been screening her calls for weeks because I didn't want it to come up. I didn't want it. I knew that she'd know straight away. She's very perceptive and she knows me better than anyone. So she called me, and I felt immediately that she'd been prompted to call me because I'd asked basically for comfort in my head.
It's interesting that the comfort came from, I've made this decision and yet I love my family and I don't want to hurt them. Go ahead.
Yeah. So my sister called me. She quite quickly could hear the distress in my voice. She could hear that I've been crying. She lived about an hour away, was married at this point, and quite recently married, actually, only a couple of years, I think, maybe less. And so she hadn't been out of the home long, and I missed her. And she just got in the car and drove straight over. And as soon as I said, yeah, please come, I immediately regretted it. And I felt anxiety, and I felt completely sick to the stomach about what was going to happen. I knew that, you know, it was late. It was probably like 9 p.m. or something. It was quite late in the evening. I knew that my parents would just be really confused, like, why are you here? You know, it's lovely that you're here, but why are you here?
You realized that you had started something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I tried to meet her at the door. That didn't happen. I didn't get there in time. Parents obviously were confused, letting her in, like, oh. And then she just came straight upstairs to help me. You know, she had the best intentions. She was so loving and so kind, and she tried to comfort me, and she asked me the question, have you gone there? And I said no, I denied it. I was trying to backtrack a lot and, you know, trying to sort of fix the problem that I'd created. She was so relieved, and she was giving me so much advice about why I shouldn't go there and what I should do to avoid it. And my heart was breaking as I was hearing those words, because I knew actually that it was something that I had missed the boat on, and some of the things she was saying were making me feel complete and utter sadness, really. I was so sad because she was describing things I was going to miss out on, and I knew she was true. I knew she was right.
So even as you were feeling like you didn't want to hear it, recognized that some of it was valid.
Yeah, I did. But I wasn't remorseful even at that point. I wasn't regretful either, because bear in mind, I was like head over heels in love with this person. I didn't regret that connection with him. And I frankly was planning to continue. It wasn't something I felt ready to give up. And so in my juvenile way, I kind of was trying, I think, to just clamber back some control over the situation. But my parents came in the room, saw us both crying. It was all very emotional, very highly, you know, sort of, I wouldn't recommend it. Laura just kind of, she'd been trying to usher me downstairs to talk to them. And I think she was just very concerned for my well-being. She could see me struggling with something that she knew my parents would be able to help me with. And I think she was just desperate to help me make this go away, I think. So she explained that we would be going downstairs and that my parents should just leave the room. So they went back downstairs. And at this point, I thought, oh, I've got no choice now. I've got to go and talk to my parents. And I felt at the time like it was very much out of my control. As an adult now, I can see that I had agency and I could have chosen differently. But in that moment, it felt very different. It felt like I really didn't have much choice, which again, I don't have harbour any feelings of resentment for at all, because they were all doing what they thought was best for me, and I'm grateful for that. So I went downstairs, told my parents, and it was awful. They were loving and they were kind and they were upset. They were worried for me and they were concerned, and it kind of quickly moved from the loving comfort. I remember my mum having her arms around me. I remember my dad being really at a loss for what to say, and bear in mind, I'm the second child of six, so they hadn't dealt with any kind of anything like this before. It kind of went in that direction, and quite swiftly moved on to, okay, what do we do now? You're going to have to see the bishop. And I clammed up. I did not want to go. I vocalised that I did not want to go, but it kind of felt like it reached a point where it was just like, it's done now. I'm just going to have to do it, you know? It's done. And I found myself in the home of my bishop, who was a close family friend, who I actually respected a lot. He had been quite inspiring through my youth, you know, with lots of firesides, lots of, you know, one-on-one chats and things. So I was embarrassed to be there. I was embarrassed to admit that I was not really wanting to be there. I didn't admit that, actually. I kind of just, by that point, I thought, well, I'm here, I might as well just run with this. I was kind of false in my conversation with him. I kind of just thought, well, I'm just going to say all the right things.
Well, and it's difficult to repent if you're not penitent.
No, it's such a crucial part.
Yeah, now you know that.
I do know that, and this is the thing, I do know that, and I do think that there's not enough emphasis in our lessons to the youth and to the young people, or to the adult people of the church. There's not enough emphasis on the remorse coming first, on the understanding of your situation.
And like you said,
first.
You're not bitter about your parents just rushing you immediately to the bishop, but if it were your daughter, you might have done something different.
Definitely, yeah. And I think they would now in hindsight, absolutely. In fact, I know they would.
Well, and luckily you were the second of six, so that they could practice on the ones who came after.
Yeah,
right.
Practice one, yeah.
Let's fast forward a little bit. Did this experience lead you away from the church? Or did you?
Yeah, for a time.
For about how long?
I went to university probably about a year after this happened. And I had just broken up with my boyfriend. It was just really heartbreaking time for me. I was just totally like, it just came all at once. I felt very much without him to sort of have that, I didn't have that safety blanket anymore. I kind of like, while it was all happening, and it did continue after I spoke to my bishop. Mm-hmm. So while that was all happening throughout our relationship, I felt it was okay. I felt secure in it
because you didn't feel restricted.
No, yeah. I didn't, and I felt safe. I felt safe with it.
So how long, for about how much time did you stay away from the church now that you finally felt like, well, I can choose whether I go to church or not. I can choose finally whether I talk to the bishop or not. These are all my choices. Mm-hmm. How long were you?
Well, I was at university for about 2 years, and the first year I was kind of placating my housemates and my family, and I kind of went on and off, and I wasn't in full activity, but I was definitely sort of reappearing at times.
To try and keep up appearances?
Yeah, I think so, mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. And also to maintain that social connection. I had lots of friends in the church, and I enjoyed their company, and a lot of them were struggling with the same things I was, and it was just very validating to be around those people at that time while I was really struggling with my path. So I was around the church, but I was not faithful.
Yeah, that's interesting, around the church rather than in the church. Yeah, yeah. So what happened to change that and to bring you back?
So it's confusing for me because when I think about those 2 years, the second year was definitely, I would say, in an inactive period. I would sporadically reappear, but not much at all, really. And it was very much, I felt quite liberated in that time. I guess because I had had some experiences in that first year of university that had really rocked my faith, had shaken it up so much that I really felt that after I broke up with my boyfriend, I kind of came to a point where I thought, okay, we're not together. He's gonna try to go on a mission. I'm gonna do the same. I'm not gonna go on a mission, but I'm gonna try and like fix this now because I feel off. It doesn't feel right, and I tried to repent. I went through the repentance process, and I found that some of the things that happened through that process were troubling for me and were triggers for me, I suppose. And it kind of brought back a lot of the questions I had in my youth, and I wasn't really
in those first lessons in young women.
So I think just certain things to do with particularly the and again, I don't harbour any feelings of, you know, blame or anything like that. All of these experiences were with kind, well-intentioned people, men. But I had experiences like, I think the only way I can really describe is if I just recount some of them, but things, just small things like being sat in sacrament meeting with a guy I really liked, who I was casually dating. He had his arm around me. I passed the sacrament along and he removed his arm from my shoulder. And I immediately felt, you know, wow, that sense of, ah, no, it's happening. I knew this would happen. I don't have my ex-boyfriend now. And now it's like, why did I do that? You know, I'm not going to escape this now. And the reality of everything hit me. And the reality was that my sexual purity was something that defined me.
Yes,
and
or that gave
really
you
hard.
Value.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's unintentional,
absolutely,
like you said.
And it is.
And it's not doctrinal.
No.
That people's sexual purity determines their value. That's
no.
not the doctrine, but I think sometimes you're right. Sometimes we communicate that without meaning to, and it particularly
yeah.
hurts the
it's
women
the
in the church.
It's the opposite of what we're taught. We're taught that women should be revered and held sacred, and but
yeah.
all of these things, like I remember feeling in your women's, you know, when we were given the lesson about being our price is far above rubies, I just thought, why do I need a price on my head? Like, you know, why don't the men have the price? Like, why do we cost something? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and that objectification is troubling,
yeah.
but it's important for people to distinguish the doctrine. Is that women are valued, and
yeah.
it is absolutely infinite, regardless mm-hmm. of any decisions they made, regardless of how their body is viewed.
Yeah.
But the culture objectifies
yeah.
women, even in the church, and that is genuinely troubling.
It is troubling,
and it's understandable. A lot of other women feel that way, so I think
mm-hmm.
it's good that we can talk about that, work through it,
yeah.
so that people who maybe hear this can understand. There's a big difference,
mm-hmm.
a huge gap. Between what the culture might teach, what you might hear in a lesson, and what the doctrine is.
Yeah.
So let's move forward to the moment where you felt like you were brought back, and if you can tie it to one specific thing that brought you back to where you felt like, despite all of these feelings, despite maybe some clumsy interactions with other people who were well-intentioned
yeah.
but clumsy,
yeah.
What brought you back and why?
Well, funnily enough, it was actually another one of those experiences that happened, and it was just kind of like the nail in the coffin for me. I just thought, well, do you know what? This is not going to stop whatever I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be seen this way, and this is just my situation. Outside or inside of the church, I'm going to have to deal with patriarchy.
Yeah, so because you perceived being taught in black and white ways, you ironically decided, I'm going to accept those same modes of thinking and it will be black and white.
Yeah.
So what helped you push through that?
I think, to be honest, it really aided me in my determination to make something better come from, to bring something out of this whole negative, like I was in a cesspit of bad choices and just really like in this kind of self-degrading pattern of behavior. And it was not healthy, it was not good, and it was not good for my soul, for my spirit. My spirit was damaged. I knew that and I felt it, and I felt a loss. And I felt that the only way to escape the things that I kept using as excuses, I kept kind of feeling like, well, do you know what? I feel this way because of all the ways that these men in the church have treated me. I feel this way because of the way that I was spoken to in an interview with the bishop, or because of the way that, you know, that person didn't get back to me for 3 days when they asked me if I was a virgin. All of these like silly things that just really, in the grand scheme of things, I should have a better understanding of my self-worth to be able just to go, do you know what, who gives a...
Right, well, I love that you point out that it was your self-worth when you finally seized your own value and decided it doesn't matter what those other people say. And the way that they tell me to value myself, I don't have to do that. I can find value. That helped you.
Yeah.
Again, you were now finally liberated.
Yeah, I was.
From something that you had perceived as being restrictive, ironically, by embracing those restrictions.
Yeah, totally.
Which is, that's the paradox that often we see in the gospel. So let's just tie this all together. I love that image of your mom in the beginning, and she's teaching you with such love. Mm-hmm. You said that you were a young woman president.
I was.
How do you teach your young women now in a way that makes it better? Like you said, I want to be fully aware of how these things, these cultural perceptions might be viewed so that I can do better.
Yeah.
I can do better with my children. I can do better with my young women so that they don't have to go through the things I went through. How do you teach your young women so that what you say and how you say it are in line with each other?
That's a really tricky question. I'm not a young women's president anymore, but at the time,
when you were,
at the time, I was quite conflicted about that issue because I was concerned about
You were aware.
What will the parents want me to say and what do I want to say, and there was a gap between those things because I was very much aware of the grey and I was very much
how
the girls would perceive it. And I remember being them. I remember being sat in those lessons, having those questions and not feeling comfortable enough to ask them. In a way that was pushy. Like I remember having the questions, not getting the answer I needed, and then shutting up. Mm-hmm. So one way that I tried to bridge that gap was to make them feel as comfortable as I possibly could to air any kinds of concerns. I remember having a conversation with one young woman about something that I had felt was incredibly reminiscent of how I was when I was exactly her age. She was asking me about sexual purity, and I was able, thankfully, to give her an honest account, not of my life and of the things that I had chosen to use my body for, but an account of my experience and what I knew to be true and the testimony I now have of why sex before marriage and why that principle is so crucial to our spiritual well-being.
So that you could line up the what and the how and now the why, because all these things shall give you experience, right? So you have the experience to match it.
Totally, yeah.
Well, and I appreciate so much you sharing that experience with such honesty. I think that's important.
I think that's a really important thing.
It's not easy. But if we can embrace the experiences we have, it can make us better parents and better leaders so that maybe our children and our young women and young men don't have to go through what we went through with the frustration. So,
yeah, and I think one of the things that can be quite tricky when as a parent you consider, like I had to consider whether I would do this interview. I had to consider whether or not that would be something that I would regret later when my kids came across it, you know, or, you know, would my children's friends make remarks about any of this, and I'm sure that that won't happen. But even so, it has to be considered, how will my children perceive my experience? And I think a lot of people are often kind of scared or concerned about sharing too much. And while I agree that some details just don't need to be aired, like they just don't, others do. Important elements of the process do. And I think that is the crucial part, is that if everyone were to be more honest about their experience as a daughter of God and as a son of God, we would have a much better chance, I think, at feeling the full measure of our eternal potential.
Right, and full measure being the operative word. You're experiencing the good and the bad together, and able to have that compound in one, in an honest, vulnerable, loving way.
Yeah.
Thank you for your example and for sharing that. I appreciate it, because sharing those details, you're not just sharing them to share them. It's purposeful. It's to improve the church.
Yeah.
It's to make our teaching better. So I appreciate you, Beth. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.